breaking ball and a call. Strike three. Third strikeout for Zach.
He's going to just watch it go. A grand slam for Bryson Stott.
And there's a high fly ball. Deep right field. Harper watches it fly.
From WHYY and Billy Penn, this is your Friday edition of Hittin' Season, a Philadelphia Phillies podcast. My name is Justin Clue. I write for Baseball Prospectus and Billy Penn. With me is Liz Rocher of Yahoo Sports. Happy Friday, Liz.
Happy Friday, Justin.
Weather,
how are you, sir?
Weather has turned. It has been more spring and summery this week than ever before. And the Phillies are set to play the just awful Chicago White Sox over the weekend, whom they once again, I'll repeat it, have no reason to lose a single game to, just as I said about the Rockies, who are the, I will say, worst team in the National League. They will now face the worst team in the American League. Yes, in my estimation, the White Sox are even worse than the Oakland Athletics, though they are in the same category. But this is a perfect chance, Elizabeth, for the Phillies to rack up some wins, have some of their struggling hitters get back on track. And we're going to talk about some of those hitters today. But are you generally feeling good about this weekend's prospects against the White Sox?
I am. I definitely am. feeling pretty good. The Phillies struggled a little bit against the Rockies at times in various ways, but they made it through the way they needed to. So I'm feeling good. I think it only gets, I think we've seen that every game there's a little something better, a little something extra that happens that didn't happen the game before. And every time I watch them, I'm like, oh, there they are. The Phillies are in there. They just need time to get out. So I'm feeling good.
That's called progress. And
yes,
sometimes it happens very slowly. Right now, there's a couple of Phillies throughout the point where they're kind of giving signs of progress. So because it hasn't tanked yet, you know, they haven't gone, you haven't regressed and gone back to what they were doing before. It still technically is progress, or has the potential to at least be progress, which is kind of the, you know, where we got to be right now as far as the Phillies go. And, you know, my point with them having no reason not to beat the Rockies and White Sox on this homestand was that even playing as sluggishly, lousily, and dopily as they had been playing, even in that state, the Phillies could beat teams like the Rockies and White Sox, who aren't just the worst teams this year. They are below the bottom as far as, like, this is inexcusably top to bottom poor. When Bryce Harper was yelling at Jake Bird and calling the Rockies organization garbage from top to bottom, yeah, that's accurate. That's an accurate statement. Kind of tough to defend when you look at anything the Rockies have done. And the same goes for the White Sox, if not more so. So I'm looking forward to the weekend. You know, who's not looking forward to the weekend is the team that just left Philadelphia, the Colorado Rockies. I don't know if you saw this, Liz, but
a
Wall Street Journal story tells us that an investigation is underway by the Federal Aviation Administration. The Rockies were on a charter flight to Toronto, where they're playing their next series. And one of their coaches put a video online of himself, I believe, sitting in the pilot's chair of an airplane while this was being filmed. The cockpit door is open. And even in just that small amount of words I just said, the FAA was able to spot probably several violations of federal law. Apparently, and this is from a New York Post write-up, after a member of the Rockies traveling party was allegedly seen on video sitting in the captain's chair in the plane's cockpit during the team's flight on April 10th, the Rockies were en route to Toronto on a charter flight operated by United, and following the September 11th terrorist attacks, federal regulations tightened around who is allowed to be on the flight deck. Guess what? It's not the Colorado Rockies. It is never the Colorado Rockies.
No. It is, by the way, it is specifically someone, probably people listening to this podcast have heard of Hensley Mullins, Rockies hitting coach Hensley Mullins, from Curacao, I believe, was the Giants hitting coach for a long time. He's been in talks to be a manager for a while. It never really happened for him. But when I saw his name attached to this, I'm like, hey, I actually know who that is. Wow.
And I'll say in his defense, he couldn't be sitting there without the pilot who is the one who should know better, saying, hey, do you want to sit in this chair?
Yeah,
like, he didn't muscle his way in there or anything. Like, it was an invitation, almost assuredly.
That's exactly what this had. This is not a commercial flight. This is not a bunch of randos. You know, this is not, you know, eight families with small children and everyone in sweatpants, which is fine. But, like, that's not what this is. This is a plane full of professional baseball players and their professional coaches. And that, you know, pilots are like anybody else. You get someone famous at your job, you get pretty excited whether or not you know or care who they are.
Boy.
They're famous. And so my thought is that Hensley Mullin said, I would love to do this. And they're like, sure, come on.
That's, it's just very funny to hear you say when someone famous shows up and you're like, the 2024 Colorado Rockies. Okay. Yeah, but I guess there's some famous people in there. I hear what you're saying.
It's less about fame and more about status.
Sure. And I hear what you're saying.
The Rockies are a professional baseball team, and these pilots are there to, you know, they're chartering this baseball team full of a bunch of, it's 100% dudes, is my guess. My guess is there might have been maybe one or two women, but it's a lot of dudes. It's a lot of dude energy with, I'm going to guess, pilots are still, vast majority are men. And so I feel as if this atmosphere lends itself a little bit to being like, yeah, you can come sit in the pilot. Yeah, come pretend you're the pilot. Everyone take a picture.
You know, like kids get to drive the boat at the Jungle Cruise, quote unquote, at Disney World. I'm not saying that that's wrong. In fact, I myself was the greatest boat pilot in Jungle Cruise history, according
well done,
to our
sir.
Guide. Just
what
something,
an honor
something
to
I
be
like
here
to
with you.
Put out there when pertinent. So I see the appeal. This is just a hilarious story that A, the Rockies were viewed as, you know, celebrity status, because I'm just thinking of, like, if I was working somewhere and the 2016 Phillies came in and someone was like, hey, the 2016 Phillies are here, I'd be like, I'm not going to get out of my chair. You know, I'm a little busy. Like, honestly, if there's anything else to do, I don't need to go say hi to that group of guys, because the Rockies are, this is not going to be a famous Rockies team, not for any of the reasons that they want to be famous. So it is just a funny celebrity moment for that
is
just unquestionably crosses lines that everyone should have been aware exists. Just hilarious. So in other news in the Phillies world, hey, you hear about this young man down at AAA who's really putting the bat on the ball, Liz?
I don't know. Who? Tell me.
Apparently, he's got four homers in his last five games.
Wow.
He's hitting .308. OPS just hit a nice, crisp 1,000. And boy, if you're reaching for position player help at multiple positions, apparently this is a guy who's really making a name for himself. And that name is Scott Kingery, who you may be aware of. I say young man. He is 29 years old. And it was former Williamsport Crosscutters beat writer Mitch Rupert who brought this to everyone's attention. He's pretty faithfully putting clips of Scott Kingery's recent success out on Twitter for everyone to enjoy. It has been another hot stretch for Scott Kingery in his what was his last spring training with the Phillies, according to the contractual obligations. And now he's down there in the up there in the regular season in Lehigh Valley, just absolutely raking. And Mitch Rupert wrote on PhilliesMinorThoughts.com about just not really going in on Scott Kingery's success, more just about looking at a guy like Scott Kingery, who's obviously been in the Phillies organization for years, obviously has all the narrative behind him that we're all aware of, that he got the 6-year extension before ever playing in the major leagues, that Matt Klentak saw something that he wanted to lock up as cheaply as he could, that never really happened, that the Phillies development system was so fractured and broken, it didn't really know what to do with Scott Kingery. People were giving him bad advice or different advice and all kinds of problems. Couldn't get enough playing time at the level the Phillies wanted him to be at certain times. Like, a lot going on at that time, none of it very good, and Scott Kingery just came out the other side of it, not being the player that I think the Phillies forecasted him to be. So now he's still in Lehigh Valley. We're still rooting for him because, it's Scott Kingery. You'd love to see the guy catch a lucky break. You don't even really know what that looks like at this point. But Rupert was writing about how sometimes you're just watching a guy who is easy to root for and enjoying what he's currently doing. And it doesn't have to mean anything. It doesn't have to be, well, they need to swap him out for Whit Merrifield. They need to do or shut up about this guy. It's enough. It's been enough. Like, we've seen enough about him. It's not happening. He flamed out, blah, blah, blah. He's like, it doesn't. He said that the two different kinds of responses, which I pretty much just characterized, that he got posting this video was like, yeah, but I'm just, what I'm doing is just watching this and enjoying it. Like, that's where we're at with Scott Kingery. When he has success, it's a good thing because a Phillies team wins and the Phillies organization wins. And, you know, regardless of what it means for the future, it's enjoyable in the moment. And if that's all the enjoyment you can get from Scott Kingery at this point, then, hey, at least there's something. And that's what he was trying to say. Of course, people aren't going to react that way, but no. It was worth noting. Scott Kingery really raking at AAA right now.
That's great. You know, it would be nice to, I don't know, like, I really wonder what he's going to do when this is all over. I'd love to know what he thinks about his, you know, I hope he's willing to do an interview at some point. It would be awesome if this were the year that he would break out, but I mean, even if he does have a great year, he's 29. Actually, he's almost 30. He'll be 30 at the end of this month. And, you know, I feel like you wonder a lot what could have been. But at the very least, I'm glad it looks like he's enjoying himself.
I will say that despite all that, I will continue to fantasize about a situation where the Phillies replace Whit Merrifield with
please.
Scott Kingery.
That I would love it.
Hey, why not? Why not? It's early in the season. We can say whatever we want.
Yep.
The Phillies can certainly do whatever they want, which they have been for the past couple weeks to start the season. We are all familiar with the Philadelphia Phillies lineup, Liz. It is full of some of the most famous names in baseball, you could say. Certainly has a lot of celebrity power behind it. Recognizable faces. Powerful free agents who were brought here, homegrown products that have grown up and really stepped into starting roles. Obviously, none of that has resulted in a lot of hitting for the Phillies. I think you could agree. The offense has certainly been dragging behind the starting pitching to start the year, and yet this team is 11-8. That last game against the Rockies kind of saw the opposite. The offense broke out. Kyle Schwarber hit a couple of home runs. They scored 7 runs, which seemed like a ton for what this offense has been able to do in the last couple of weeks. It was the pitching that almost blew the game as the bullpen imploded, centralized on a Gregory Soto inning that was just tough to watch. And the Rockies got within one of tying the game, but fortunately the Phillies were able to pull out the victory thanks to the fact that they were able to build enough of a lead to survive a bullpen implosion. So I thought it would be a productive exercise today if here, right before we start another Phillies series over the weekend, we just kind of go through the lineup, talk about what was expected of a hitter and what his general context was in the lineup and after last year, and then talk about what we've seen from them so far. Do we feel like they are succeeding at what they were supposed to do or changing narratives about who they were going into 2024? I think there's, when you say that the top to bottom, the lineup has been struggling, I think that's certainly true. I think you're starting to see cases of success from guys who maybe have been struggling. I think you're starting to see more hard hit balls. I think you're starting to see some hard outs and warning track fly outs that are usually the precursor for greater success. And we're going to kind of get down to an individual level and see who's doing what here. I think that'll calm everyone down. I think that'll finally get everybody on the same. And that's ultimately what we're trying to do here. Just calm everyone down.
This is definitely something that's possible.
Yes. And
that is a thing that we're doing. It's an accomplishable goal.
And we're going to do it here on Hittin' Season.
For the first time in history.
So I just took the lineup from their last game against the Rockies, and we'll just go top to bottom talking about each individual person. So Liz, in regards to Kyle Schwarber, coming into 2024, before he'd taken a single at bat and having just watched him the last 2 years with the Phillies and just knowing who he is and generally how he works, what were your personal expectations for Kyle Schwarber coming into 2024?
My expectations is that he would continue to be pretty much exactly the player that he had been, which is lots of homers and some walks, some good walks. And that is what I expected because that is what we've seen from him. last year and the year before to some extent. So were those your expectations coming into the season as well?
Schwarber's actually got the shortest summary of any of these guys. The before part is just he won't hit till June. That's everybody's thing on Kyle Schwarber coming into any season. You're absolutely right, Liz. I mean, the home runs thing kind of goes without saying at this point. Kyle Schwarber is home runs. That's what he is.
He is like the physical embodiment of, in a way, like the perfect home run hitter. He's like, he's a little stocky, but he's got some muscle. When he's healthy, he could do some running, but he can really hit a ball. Wow.
And that, of course, means that you're not always going to see the highest batting average in the batting average column for Kyle Schwarber, but you also don't really need to. We saw last year he found plenty of ways to contribute with his bat despite struggling to hit 200 for most of the season. Feels crazy, but it is, you know, it's also just a testament to the fact that batting average is not the end-all, be-all stat that it once was considered, and there's still people who consider it that way, and that's all they see about him, and they think, well, this is a bad baseball player. But the fact is, he brings the kind of power and consistent power that the Phillies don't really get from anybody else, not and certainly not at his level. He's hitting upwards of 50 home runs the past 2 years. That's something that's excelling, I think, what people thought he was going to exceeding what people thought he was going to be able to contribute, even being the kind of hitter he was. So if we're going into the season and we're saying, I want Kyle Schwarber to hit home runs and I want Kyle Schwarber to hit before June, I got great news, honestly. This is we're starting with some good news here. Kyle Schwarber reclaimed the lead team lead in home runs with his two in game three against the Rockies. He now has 5. To start the season. That is, like I said, the most on the Phillies. He also hit his 250th career bomb against the Rockies, which was a milestone, obviously. He's got a 321 on base percentage and a 432 slugging percentage this year. That is higher than it was in 2022 when he had a 229 on base percentage, about 100 points shy of what it is now. 386 slugging, about 50 points shy of where it is now. And 2023, his on base and slugging were pretty close to the same as they are now, a little lower, but pretty much the same ballpark. So I guess what we're saying is he's hitting better at this point than he was in the last 2 years, just in general, and which means, you know, he's obviously hitting before June, and he's hitting home runs. I mean, nobody's saying all-star year for Kyle Schwarber, but and he obviously, I think the first week of the season, he really looked like he was going to be one of these slow guys, but he has broken out and seems to be doing what he's supposed to be doing. So as far as Kyle Schwarber goes, I would say not a problem area at this time.
Yeah, I would agree. I mean, he's doing, oddly, like substantially better through through his first 19 games this year than he had been for the past two. Actually, through the first 19 games last year, Kyle Schwarber had the exact same batting average as he would end the season with.
Mm-hmm.
197. Lower on base and like an almost exact slugging. At this point, last year he had 4 home runs, and this year he has 5. But this year his batting average is higher. He's actually, there are other hits happening. I think we're seeing that he's sacrificing. He isn't being as patient. I think there are fewer walks happening.
Correct.
Yes, I think it's fewer walks by. At this point last year, it wasn't actually through 19 games last year and the year before, he had 12 exactly. This year he's got 10. And so it's, you know, it feels dramatic because it's very early. But some of this, I'm sure, will level off.
He's also singling more. He was hitting more singles earlier in the year, which was a sign more so than the walks that he was going to be hitting a little more this early in the year. So here we are.
I'm happy with that. Like, he can, like, as long as he still hits some homers, he can single too. That's great.
On April 19th, Kyle Schwarber is doing what Kyle Schwarber should be doing. So as far as what his job is, hitting home runs and getting on base, he is doing that, and he is doing it a little better than he typically has at this point in the season, historically. So, no problem, no sirens going off about Kyle Schwarber at the moment. Moving down the batting order, Trey Turner. Boy, there was like a week and a half where I was throwing Trey Turner into the same conversation as Nick Castellanos, and that's just incorrect. Like, going into the season, Trey Turner was, you know, I think there were some question marks around it. There was some quiet concern about Trey Turner. Yes, he finished the season, obviously, with much better hitting than he started it with last year. Can he give the Phillies a full season of productivity was the question. It was an assumption like all winter long, but then the closer we got to actual baseball, it became more of a question like, but will he do that? Because we've learned star players put a bat in their hands and a Phillies uniform on their torso, and who knows what's going to happen.
That's true.
We needed a little more than just 2 months of success from Trey Turner after some clapping. And the one thing that worked for him last year was his speed all year long and base stealing. So little else was working. So he had few opportunities to use his speed as successfully as he has in the past. And projections going into this season were that Turner still has his raw skill in general, but he is getting less patient at the plate and he is making more weak contact, which are not things you really want from your number two hitter and the guy who's going to be here for over a decade. But here we are on April 19th. Trey Turner is hitting .329 after 19 games. That's every game, by the way. He has played in every game. He has the team lead in base hits by far with 25. Marsh and Schwarber are tied behind him with 17 each. He is second on the team in runs scored with 13 behind Schwarber. And as far as soft contact, well, according to FanGraphs, he's made the least amount of soft contact of all Phillies starters with weak contact in 13.8% of his batted balls. Only Bryce Harper has made less weak contact. Now, he's not hitting it very hard either every time, but he is among the team lead in what's called medium contact. And he's also up there with Johan Rojas and Alec Bohm in Phillies for whom over the balls they've hit have been on the ground. With more opportunities on base than last year, he's stolen the same amount of bases as he did at this point last year, 4. But it's worth noting that he has stolen 39 in a row without getting caught, which is a number that keeps getting staggeringly larger every time he steals a base. I will also add eyeball test. He isn't excelling at shortstop defensively this year. And again, he seems to be struggling with the throw over to first specifically. I can't say that I feel 100% when a grounder goes out to shortstop. He is not going to win a gold glove out there, but I don't think it's anything that's worth ripping your hair out just over just yet. I think in general, you can look at his offensive numbers and say, yeah, this guy is doing his job too.
If he's still hitting, I don't care. Like, I just don't. If he's still hitting, unless he's booting every play, like, I'm fine with the way he's, with the way things are going, because he will more than make up for it. And I'm pretty sure this just feels like early season cold weather nonsense. So
he has generated the third most wins above replacement for the Phillies so far this year. Brandon Marsh is ahead of him by a tenth of a point. Do you know who number one, the Phillies player who has accrued the most WAR this season is?
Is it Aaron Nola?
It is not.
No. Who is it?
Ranger Suarez.
Ah, damn. I forgot.
The 2024 Phillies wins above replacement leader. Yeah. So see, here we are looking at the lineup. April 19th for a team that has been struggling offensively. First two guys in it really aren't doing too bad. You know, maybe the Schwarber kind of started a little slow, but we're still, I feel like, at the beginning. So
yeah.
I feel weird saying he started slow, but now he's doing well. They are both guys who I don't think you have to be immediately concerned about. We'll get to those guys. They are in this lineup. We will get to them. But right now, we got Bryce Harper. Harper is a little different. He is technically still in recovery from the injury for which he received Tommy John last year, technically. The fact that the fast recovery is crazy and fun to talk about that he returned from in early May last year. But really, we're in new territory because of that, because he came back so early, because he came back earlier than anyone ever has from Tommy John surgery, that we are really still seeing what the after effects of this are going to be. You know, it could be nothing, but when a guy comes back that fast, you never know, because this was an issue that was lingering for him for about 2 years before the surgery. Then he went on a baseball killing spree in August, and that really calmed everybody down. He was scuffling at the plate after his initial return, but then, you know, when August came around, he seems to refound his killing stroke, and everybody was like, okay, Bryce Harper's fine, moving on. And now we're more in phase two because, you know, like I said, that was more of a long-term issue. This explains the sizable dip outlets like Baseball Prospectus projected Harper to have this year, where they wrote that he would hit they projected him hitting for less power and average and striking out more than ever in his age 31 season. So where are we with Bryce? Well, he's hitting 216, and he's grounded into more double plays than anybody in baseball. That's the bad news. Which might be why, by the way, Trey Turner solved his getting on base problem, but isn't getting as many chances to steal and advance and score.
Yeah, this team kind of only technically works like the way it should when at least Bryce Harper is doing what he's supposed to do. If he's not doing that, then there's always like a big problem.
Now, the thing is, Trey Turner is hitting fly balls at a higher rate than he's hitting ground balls. And no one on the Phillies is hitting the ball harder than Bryce Harper, which shouldn't surprise anybody. 48% of his batted balls are hit what FanGraphs classifies as hard. Eyeball test, Bryce Harper's been flying out to the warning track, I feel like, for like 3 or 4 days. Like he is, yeah. It is there. It is not all the way there. I think this is largely the product of pushing. I think he saw a situation where the entire offense was struggling. I do think the Phillies wanted to avoid a slow start this year. I don't know if you would call that a success yet. Again, I still feel like we're in the beginning, so we can't really judge that yet. But I think he saw, hey, look, the lineup, here we go again. You know, I got to fix this. And the only way I know how to fix things is to swing harder every at bat I go up there. And that doesn't always work. We've seen him fall into that trap before. He swings harder, he swings more aggressively, and he strikes out. So that's not the answer, but I do think he's just about got his head on straight a few weeks in. And I'm saying right now, if you're looking at who's going to go off against the White Sox this weekend, I'm going to say Bryce Harper's going to have a real nice weekend against the Chicago White Sox.
This is the opportunity he needs because he could take batting practice if he wanted. He just has to not try too hard because the White Sox are a great team to just relax and let it happen against because you don't have to try too hard against them. I was looking at his splits just now. He is hitting 200 against right-handers.
Mm-hmm.
His batting average on ball in play against right-handers is also 182.
Which, as a reminder, that is a statistic that indicates the amount of bad luck a hitter is experiencing after the ball they hit is in play.
Yeah.
And the lower it is, like you want that number to be about 300. If that number is 300, it means that the statistics you're seeing elsewhere are more indicative of what that player is like doing. That is their output. When that number is above or below 300 dramatically, it means that luck has become a factor and the numbers you're seeing may not be as realistic a portrayal as you would think.
His overall batting average on balls in play is 239. So he has been, and I think that's a lot of what the double plays have been. It's just very bad luck. You know, he's not Wilson Valdez from 2011. He's not like this is not him. This is just bad luck. And the only thing he could do is just get past it.
And the thing about a double play ball, like a great double play ball, is that it's hit really hard. So it gets to the fielder fast and they have time to turn a double play. So again, he's hitting it hard. It's just not going where he wants it to go right now. I think, like I said, I think facing some weak pitching, especially Mike Soroka is getting a start for the White Sox this weekend. Whew. Facing some weak pitching, I think Bryce Harper can feast a bit against this very weak team. Moving down the batting order, JT Realmuto. Now, before the season, nobody was going to say that JT Realmuto was declining. Nobody's whipping the D word out yet, but they had to note his pitch framing and offensive output were both significantly downish last year. And more notably, nobody was like, I expect that to change. Nobody said he's definitely going to keep going down, but the analysts were kind of like tight-lipped about, I expect him to rebound this year. I think they see that all these top Phillies players are in their 30s and analysts get real concerned about what they project about catchers who have entered their 30s.
Oh, yeah.
Well, here we are, April 19th. Realmuto has caught 3 of 22 base stealers this year. That's bad.
That is it's terrible.
That is a 14% caught stealing percentage. We are very far, very far from the end of the season, but that is also very far from the numbers in that category with which Real Muto has ended other seasons of his career. In 2022, he finished with 44% caught stealing percentage, the best in baseball. In 2023, it dropped to 22%. Obviously now 14 is even lower than 22. The three-part attack of any catcher throwing out a base runner at second is his exchange time, which is when he gets the ball from his mitt into his throwing hand, his throwing strength, and his accuracy. When you put those first two things together, they create a stat called pop time. And according to Baseball Savant, Real Muto does still have the second fastest pop time in all of baseball at 186.
So, if those things aren't the issue.
Yeah. Last year, he led the league in pop time with 183. So he's really not far off. Noted catching coach for the Rockies. He's kind of like an organizational catching coach. I don't think he was on that plane is what I'm saying. Rockies coach Jerry Weinstein recently said that Real Muto's velocity is at the higher end for catchers and that he seems to adjust his stance in response to a runner's break from first as he hops up. This is one of those things that happens so fast in a baseball game that you're never going to catch it with the naked eye. But Weinstein was kind of just theorizing, talking out loud, like, I don't know if that's determined beforehand that he's made a decision, I'm going to throw it like this when I pop up, or if it's in response to what he's looking at when he jumps up and he's like, I got to throw it like this because this is the situation. Again, this is happening so fast, it's tough to even think on that level. I've seen his accuracy be the problem on a couple of throws this year. He's thrown to the other side of the bag, which obviously is basically an invitation to a base runner to be safe. And maybe Philly's pitchers have been a little slow to the plate this year. I didn't look that up, but that is something that comes up occasionally as well. Or maybe he's just not as quick as he used to be. We'll see. We'll see. Yeah. I mean, quick, I feel like isn't the right word to use there because I just said his pop time is second fastest in baseball. So again, this is one of those areas where some of the stuff is still working when you look at the statistics, but the naked eye test doesn't always seem to be the case. As far as offense for JT Realmuto, his slash line in 2022 by April 19th, he was hitting .333, getting on base at .378 clip, .452 slugging, one home run. 2023, he was hitting .270 at this point, about 60 points lower, .288 on base percentage, and a .476 slugging percentage with two home runs. You know, those some of those numbers are kind of far apart, but that's a product of being early in the season. Numbers fluctuate a lot more when the sample size is so small. In general, you can look at those numbers and be like, well, seems like it's not crazy for the same guy to have produced both of those. We're talking about two different seasons. Coming into 2024 now, at this point, he is hitting .262. He's getting on base .308, and his slugging percentage is .410, and he has three home runs. So, I mean, he's in the same ballpark as he's been the last 3 years. Got off to a hot start in 2022, not quite as hot a start in 2023, and here we are with, like, yeah, he's doing okay in 2024, same kind of numbers. You know, again, nobody's saying automatic all-star spot, but he seems like he's doing his job, except that it's the thing that he really excelled at. Well, he excelled at it so much that maybe all he had to do was go down from his caught stealing numbers.
Yeah, that's definitely a fair way to think about it. I'm looking at his Baseball Reference page right now, and when I was surprised to see how long he has been here. I don't know, because he definitely has been here. This is his
year sixth, five? Six. Wow.
Yeah. Six. He's next year is his last contract year. I think he might have an option year. I'm not sure. But 2025 is his last year, you know, his last year under contract here. And I think that's right. It feels right. He has been a great catcher for a long time, and he still is, I think, very good at handling his staff. And that's not something the Phillies take lightly. They actually, I think, place a greater importance on that than a lot of clubs do. But we're getting to the point where it's actually time for them to start looking for someone new. It's time for them to start making plans for what happens after. You know, do they want to make a big commitment to him again when he, if he's a free agent in 2026, what does he want? You know, because he will have to come to terms with the fact that he is, in fact, getting older, and some of his strengths are no longer strengths. Like, if his pop time is still good, then it seems like his issues must be accuracy and maybe throwing position. And I hope the Phillies know this and want him to work on it. I hope he's aware of what he needs to work on. That's one of those things. Like, I don't know how open he is to that type of instruction.
I feel like the Phillies have a pretty touted catching lab, and that they have JT Realmuto is a huge boon for that. So I think, he's got the assets around him and the resources around him and the coaching around him to aid with these kind of situations. So I guess I'm going to chalk this up because his offense is pretty much where it was, where it has been historically. And he's actually, he's hit more home runs at this point in the season than he has in the past 2 years. I'm going to say he's doing his job at the plate. And I'm going to say that there is still plenty of time for his catching numbers to catch up with his offensive success thus far. I think he's got, he is too, I know like the catching drop-offs can happen very suddenly and abruptly. They really can. And he was putting up the kind of cartoonishly good numbers that you knew couldn't last forever. He could have just sunk down to pretty good and been a pretty good guy at catching base stealers. And that would have been like two levels down from where he had been producing in 2022 when he was just absolutely the best at it. Those numbers were always going to come down. So it's good to see his pop time is still where it's always been. And I think that kind of lends itself to the idea that he's still capable of putting up really good numbers from behind the plate. And I'm willing to see, more weeks go by before I conclude, the guy's washed as far as being one of the best catchers or the best catcher in baseball goes. I'm not ready to say that yet, but this is, this is a difference. This is a difference for him. 3 of 22. I mean, that's not good. Guys are running on you. So moving down the batting order, Alec Bohm. Before the season, I think there was a lot of talk about Bohm and Stott, these younger guys in the lineup, these Phillies prospects. They're up and they're major league starters now. Is what we've seen from them their ceilings? And in Stott's case, the conversation was largely he's got more to give and he probably could be a star. In Bohm's case, I think a lot of people said he's essentially at his ceiling. On offense and defense. He's coming off a year in which he showed a new dimension of power and a better, more patient approach at the plate. This was a product of where he was hitting in the lineup, but he was the Phillies' best hitter with runners in scoring positions for long stretches. He can hit hard, but not always solidly, and he struggles to elevate the ball. But that being said, in general, if you said after last year, that's Alec Bohm, the best you can hope to get from him moving forward is what you just got from him, I would say that's fine. He does not need to be the center of this lineup. He can just be the kind of solid hitter, contact hitter with some power that he has been, and that's fine. So here we are in 2024, and he's not striking out a lot. His walk to strikeout ratio is tied for highest on the team at 0.7. He is one of five Phillies hitting 300 or higher with runners in scoring position with at least 10 plate appearances. The others are Trey Turner, Brandon Marsh, Bryce Harper, and Johan Rojas. Okay. If we narrow that to runners in scoring position with two outs, Alec Bohm has hit 375 in 9 plate appearances. At third, look, sometimes he dazzles. And sometimes he distresses.
Yes.
We have seen him make incredible plays, truly incredible plays.
Absolutely.
And strong throws. There's been a lot of weak contact down into the hot corner this year. And I've seen him make that barehanded play. And sometimes he makes it. Sometimes he doesn't. But I feel like he's made it more than he hasn't. We've seen him make plays that get him compared to Mike Schmidt. We've seen him make game-breaking goofs, like to start game two against the Braves. That was a real bummer.
Yeah.
Larry Anderson was talking on the radio the other night about how Alec Bohm is really hard on himself. And LA felt that was a good thing. He was like, I like that about him. But he also noted that there are times Alec Bohm gets up mad from like diving for a ball that he didn't get because it went off his glove or he didn't get to. And he said, these are all like balls he had no chance on. And he's still being just as hard on himself. And he didn't really use it as a starting point to talk about like mental skills, but that's just something that you notice about, because that's something I've brought up before. He said that last night, that Alec Bohm is a strong, he has a lot of strong reactions out there. You can tell
he's very emotional, and as someone who is also whose emotions are often right under the surface, I relate to that quite a bit.
So mentally, he's trying to give more than he probably can. But in general, I'd say with Bohm, he's giving indications that once the dust settles, he'll be right along with most of his projections for the year. He's got some stuff to tighten up, but he's, again, another guy who's generally where he's supposed to be right now.
Yeah, it's very early. I think what we're seeing is largely good. There'll be an opportunity for him to, raise whatever it is people are concerned about, his slugging, his batting average, whatever it is. Yeah. There will be, my goodness, he's tied for the team lead in walks. I think, that's RBI. I can't read anything. He has walked actually 11 times? Wow.
I mean, if you want to say, well, he gets all these RBIs because of where he hits in the batting order, that's not going to make me change my mind here, because you want somebody who's going to come up with runners on base to hit with runners on base. And he does that. Like you said, He's tied for the team lead in RBI with Bryce Harper. That is a good thing. He's hitting .242. People are going to see that number and be like, huh, you're okay with this? And obviously you want all of his numbers to be a little higher. I don't think he's playing at his ceiling yet. Like we talked about his ceiling being last year. I don't think he's there yet. I think he's got more to give this year to reach that point. And once he does, that's fine. But again, I'm okay with where he is right now, because I think he's on the right path. I think he's doing what he needs to do to get to his ceiling. And the numbers, again, fluctuate so much at this point in the year. So far, we've gone down this list, and Harper is struggling probably the most of the guys we've talked about. And I just want to take a break here for a second and say, I'm not trying to sell you Phillies tickets. I'm not trying to sell you the Phillies either. This is more just an exercise to go through the batting order one guy at a time and talk about what's working and what isn't. And not even everything we've talked about for guys we're saying, okay, he's doing all right. Not everything is working with all of these guys. Like I mentioned, Trey Turner's defense has been a bit of a scuffle. Real Muto behind the plate, his numbers are going down. I'm not trying to, throw some sunshine on what has been a dreary beginning to the season. Yeah. But the fact of the matter is that when you look at the numbers and you know what some of these numbers mean, and you can see that, okay, this guy may be causing a lot of outs, but he's hitting the ball hard. These are signs that things can improve. And what you want to avoid is the idea that how the team's playing now is how they're going to play for the rest of the season. And I think my conclusion has been thus far that that is not the case. But don't worry, again, if you're down on the Phillies, which, I wouldn't say I'm way up on the Phillies right now. The names are coming in this exercise that are not as exciting, let's say, to talk about. But first, Brandon Marsh. Last year, Marsh had a real hot start, followed by some mediocre output for most of the rest of the way. Given that he adds defense to the outfield, an average output from Marsh is okay, but the days of the platoon hindering him are reaching an end, I would hope. Ooh. Even though his numbers against lefties are still, not what you want to see. He deserves to play every day, because Brandon Marsh is absolutely terrific. He is doing, I think, more than what the Phillies probably imagined him doing when he came here from Anaheim. Playing in left field, he's at .288 so far this year. He's getting on base at a .306 clip, and his slugging percentage is .542. He has hit 4 home runs this year, which, as a guy who is not a power hitter, is really something to see, including a one-off Spencer Strider on opening day. And he's hitting the opposite field, which is, again, both of his first 2 home runs were opposite field home runs.
April. It's cold. Whew. What is he doing?
Yeah.
He's wet all the time.
And yeah, as far as being a teammate goes, ideal teammate. People were loving so much that when Pache hit that walk-off hit, it was Marsh who was out there to celebrate with him first. The people but they competed for the average. I don't think it's that kind of situation, guys.
That's the thing. They didn't compete. They're teammates. It's sort of like the infield guys kind of form their own group. The outfield guys form their own group. They're all close as a team, but the outfield guys spend time together doing drills, just like the infield guys do. So they're close, and you can sort of see Brandon Marsh is the best teammate. he's the best teammate you can have because he's going to be out there cheering for you all the time. My gosh. And then to what a great start to the season he's had. Like he has completely forced Rob Thompson's hand here because he's just proven that he should be out there all the time. Like pretty much every time he's taken an at bat, had a chance to do something in the field. I know he has not been perfect. He's had at least one or two oopsies, but
a couple of them out there, including in game one.
Yeah.
When, that was a bummer. Yeah, that ball go off his glove. That felt more like a timing issue. It didn't time his jump exactly right, and a ball grazed off the top of his glove and went over the fence. And as far as his numbers against lefties, he's hitting 188 in 18 plate appearances against lefties. So take that into account. He has also struck out half the time he's faced them. But versus righties, he's hitting 326 with a 992 OPS. In general, he's hitting, like I said, 288 with an 849 OPS. He's been hitting for a bunch more power lately. Like I said, the four homers. He's on track. He's a hitter. He does what he needs to when he sees a fastball, which is more than you can say about some Phillies hitters. And I will say it's a smaller number of opportunities, so it inflates this number a little bit. Thompson was still platooning him earlier in the year, so he doesn't have as many plate appearances against lefties. But in those 18 plate appearances, he does have the highest line drive percentage of any Phillies starter versus a left-handed pitcher.
62 plate appearances. It's 18 games.
18 games. Sorry, 62 plate appearances. So that's not nothing. It's no. Yeah, there are some caveats to that stat, but it's not nothing. It shows that he can hit lefties when given the opportunity, even if they result in outs. He is hitting line drives, which, you know, if you have a guy who's hitting line drives, eventually they're going to start becoming base hits. That's just what happens. So Brandon Marsh, absolutely no complaints.
None.
Yeah. Glowing reviews across the board. Same can't be said for the next guy.
Let's talk about him.
Nick Castellanos, a struggling veteran hitter who looked totally absent from the end of the 2023 NLCS by his own admission. Castellanos' swing decisions have historically been called hyper-aggressive. It's an approach that, when he's barreling up and cutting down on pop-ups, he can see impressive results, but his frequency of contact has been infrequent. So here we are. Castellanos has famously yet to record a single extra base hit this year through 19 games and 75 plate appearances. He led the team in doubles in 2023. It's worth noting. Much has been made of this effort to cut down on chasing pitches, which was his biggest nemesis, swinging at that low and outside slider. But the theory is leaning more towards maybe he was having better fortunes when he was just engaging those swing wild instincts that he has. Like a butterfly in a jar, Castellanos may seem more controllable, but he is far less comfortable. And it only takes one look at a three-pitch at bat that sends him walking dejectedly back to the dugout to see a man who is not comfortable at the plate right now. He strikes out in about a quarter of his at-bats, which isn't crazy. Brandon Marsh strikes out in 37% of his. We just gave him a plus across the board. But Castellanos isn't doing anything really right now.
No.
He isn't hitting. He isn't walking. He's made a sharp play in right field a time or two. He had that walk-off single against the Pirates. But right now, with how he's going, when he gets on base after hitting the ball, I've seen more like soft contact, Texas leaguers, grounder that finds a hole through sheer luck. It feels like an exception to his overall struggles. Leo Morgenstern of Fangraphs, formerly of The Good Fight, informed us yesterday that not only is Nick Castellanos not have an extra base hit after 19 games, he is the only qualified hitter in Major League Baseball without an extra base hit. He's just having a real lousy start. And honestly, Liz, there is no one I want to see less when there's runners in scoring position.
Yeah, it's not good. Like, he's having some bad luck, but it's hot. Like, he's having bad luck, but he's also not putting the ball in play very often, too.
Right. You can't just say bad luck. Like, the guy is.
He struck out 19 times. Like, we're approaching the point, like you say, like, and Trey Turner said it last year, you have to get through it. You have to keep going. I feel like we're approaching the point with Castellanos, with him being the way he is, that we're approaching hard reset point. We're approaching, all right, it's time. You got to sit out like not just sit out, but you need to, we need to, you need to re, you need to exit and re-enter, you know?
Yeah.
You need to exit, you need to take a shower, you need to have a good night's sleep, have a full meal with your family, you know, and then re-enter and see what happens. Just, he needs something. He needs to, you know, because it's Castellanos and because we know he's very aggressive, he's also very sensitive. He's very perceptive to small things and little changes. I think we're seeing that he really does want to succeed and he's doing what the Phillies tell him. And he's not having the success he should be having. And it's leaked into every part of his game. Every part of him is now affected.
It's... Gotta just make sure he knows he can swing at that pitch out of the zone if he wants to. They're not saying he should, but just let him know that he has the freedom to do that. So that in his head, he's not going to the plate thinking like, I have all these constraints, I gotta follow this plan. Just let him walk up there free as a bird.
It feels like decision paralysis a little bit. Like, he sees the pitch coming. He's like, all right, I know. I'm going to look at this. And then he's like, oh, it's coming. It's coming. Oh, crap. What do I do? No. Ah! And then it's in the glove. And then, you know, the at-bat is over. So, like, we don't want him to commit to swing before he gets up there. But maybe. Like, and outsiders just don't know. I have no idea. Like, it's not my job to suggest to him what he should do. But, I just wish I had something to put out into the world other than just go sleep for 5 days. Go on a bender. You know, go drink some ayahuasca. I don't care. Do something.
I think you're right that eventually this is the kind of slump that can only be fixed by some sort of hard reset. I'm dangerously close to looking past the White Sox entirely, but I'll just throw this out there. This would not be a bad time. I mean, I could see the argument, no, give Castellanos his regular at-bats because he's going to be facing a weak team, and perhaps this is a way to get him back on track by beating up on a weaker opponent, and potentially, and then taking that success and that momentum into the next series when the Phillies go to Cincinnati. But...
That's
I could also
if he succeeds.
I could see this as a good opportunity, even just in one of these games, to have him sit. And if you want to have him pinch hit in like a big high leverage moment later, I'm not saying that's like, oh, I want to see that because I just said there's no one I want to see less in runners in scoring position. But that'd be a good way because Rob Thompson manages with his players at the forefront. That'd be a good way to be like, oh, yeah, this really is just rest. I still trust you in a situation like this. But I took the burden, quote unquote, of starting today for you to clear your head. You know, like you got to start on the bench, but you know, now he's still available to use in a key situation to be like, yeah, I still want you to be the guy who gets this big hit because I think you can still be that guy. Castellanos, I just struggle because he's the only guy in this lineup that I have had the thoughts of what if it never comes back?
That is exactly right. I have had the same thoughts. Because he's the guy that feels the most. Like, sometimes where... Because he said it. It can come and then it can just go. And it's gone. You don't know what happened to it. And when the way he characterizes it really makes me feel with him, he constantly feels like it's something that could go. Mm-hmm. And that is... And I feel like that has a lot to do with his mentality. I feel like athletes love... Not love to, but they often feel like, you know, they had, you know, maybe a little bit of talent, but like hard work and determination and blah, blah, blah. When in reality, a lot of them were born with natural talent to do this. And hard work did help them hone it. But, you know, we all know someone who was decent at baseball and, you know, in high school. But if they had tried, most likely they would not have been able to make it very far. It's a special kind of talent. And I think part of his problem is that he doesn't believe he has it. That he doesn't really believe that it's something that belongs to him, that he has the innate ability to do this always. Because he does.
And to be clear, I'm not saying I don't think it's ever coming back.
Oh,
it's just he's the only guy in the lineup where it has the potential that maybe it doesn't has entered my head, you know, at least once watching the,
because he feels so, it just feels
well, the depth like of the his struggles are... like he has been not just like, oh, he's like, he's having a little off beginning to the year. It's like, no, man, he has not had a game where I've thought, okay, he's got it. Like, yeah, he has looked lost from day one.
It's not a localized power outage.
Yeah.
You know, it's not part of New York. It's not one borough. It's like the giant New York blackout, like 21 years ago. The entire city is out and it's pitch black.
Yeah.
That's what it feels like.
Yeah. So hopefully, Castellanos, there's some kind of solution in the days ahead. But he is definitely, I think, the number one struggling hitter in the Phillies lineup right now.
Or at least the one that we expected more out of, let's say.
Well, context is important when you say this, because I know a lot of people would say, well, Johan Rojas has been a complete black hole, but that's a different situation. The Phillies want him, like, he's on the way up. He is a guy who needs to figure out hitting, and he's only going to get better at it by getting exposed to it. And yeah, I get frustrated when he comes up in a key situation too, because he has also struggled. But they also, they're going to give him those at bats because they want him to have them. And as we're going to talk about, the results are starting to turn in the slightest way. But first, we got to talk about Bryson Stott. Entering the season, what were the expectations and projections for Bryson Stott? Big things.
Yes.
Big things for Bryson Stott this year. I and many others were waiting to see Bryson Stott take another step toward the top of the league this year. So far, no dice. Line drives to all fields were his specialty, and speed on the base paths. A great contact hitter. That was Bryson Stott's general profile. They obviously moved him over to second, and you know the results there are fine, you know, defensively. Here we are, April 19th. Stott's numbers at this point in the season are between his awfully slow start in 2022 and his explosive start to 2023 when he went on a 17-game hitting streak. No Phillies starter is hitting line drives at a higher rate right now than Bryson Stott, which is important.
Oh, he said, thank God. Like, I have not looked up those numbers, and I was worried you're going to say the opposite. I'm like, oh, God, we're going to have to talk about that.
No.
Now at least it's better.
He is still doing what one of his strengths has always been. He is hitting .237 with a .618 OPS. Those numbers aren't good. He has 4 hits in the last 5 games, but only 3 strikeouts in the last 5 games. Ooh, as well. Okay. He's been dropped to 8th in the order. There's more in there. And I think he's another one of these guys who's making his way back. And it's going slow, but I do think he's making his way back. I think he's getting caught in a slow start, same as a lot of them. And he's got more to give. And when he looked at his swing from last year and now, which he did recently because of his slow start, he watched tape from 2023 and 2024. And he's like, I see no difference. I see no obvious thing that I'm doing that is a mistake that I need to correct. He is unbothered by his struggles, according to Matt Gelb in a write-up in The Athletic. And when he talked to Kevin Long, Long told him, quote, we're not changing a thing. Just stay right there. They're not going to catch every single ball you hit. So the Phillies look at what Bryson Stott's struggles have been to start the season, and they see a guy who is hitting correctly, just not fortunately at the moment, which I feel like is also a great reminder of what a hitting coach does. We have seen, because of the Phillies' comprehensive offensive shortcomings, we have seen a lot of calls for Rob Thompson and Kevin Long to go. And I
morons,
think this is just another good opportunity to remind everyone, this is sometimes what a hitting coach's job is, where he just says, actually, I know you're struggling, but we're not going to change anything because you and I have both looked at the tape and we're not seeing any obvious mistakes. And you're still hitting a bunch of line drives, so just keep doing what you're doing. And, you know, it might not switch on immediately. It might still be a couple of weeks. But eventually it's going to happen. It's a long season, and sometimes that's what Kevin Long's job is. Sometimes his job is to tell you, hey, do this, or fix this, or adjust this. And sometimes his job is to say, keep doing what you're doing. Like, that is a hitting coach's job. So, again, he's not... We've been over this. He's not just like coming in and going like, hey, let's all hold the bats upside down today. Like, that's not what a hitting coach does. It's not a high school baseball team. Like, he is there for the guys who need him. And he is there to seek out guys for whom he has seen issues to correct. And, you know, before he, when he was hired here. We knew that Kevin Long was an industry-wide celebrated figure in the hitting coach role. So,
and
as far as guys to have in that
but
role,
good things.
Yeah, for the for their young hitters, especially like Bryson Stott, he has been valuable to have around. So,
well, and his attitude is in no doubt part of why Bryson Stott feels unbothered. You know, he's done what he needs to do. He's done his due diligence. He's talked to Kevin Long and he trusts him enough to know, no, this is right. I'm good to feel this way. His batting average on balls in play is not great this year. It's lower than it was last year. It's like 270. Should be a little bit higher than that. So he's getting slightly unlucky. I'm looking at his platoon splits. He has hit the crap out of left-hand pitchers. And he has done almost nothing against righties. Last year, he was pretty even. 280 against righties and 282 against lefties. Like, whatever is happening right now is bizarre. And it almost certainly will not happen over the course of the entire season. Like, there's no other player that it is wiser to be patient with than Bryson Stott.
Well, real quick here, let's just finish up with Johan Rojas. Great defense, the kind you don't always detect when he makes a play. He tracked down a ball in the gap the other night that he made look like a routine defensive play that was not a routine defensive play. He just needs a bat that needed to be good enough for the majors. You know, we all knew what the Johan Rojas story was coming into this season. It got the most coverage probably of any individual player as far as like winning a job and roster drama goes. The bat for Rojas did not come out in the spring like the Phillies hoped it would. Hasn't really broken out yet either. But like Harper, the signs are starting to emerge that Rojas can hit a major league pitch hard. I know people will maybe contest that, but if you've been watching the games and if you look at the numbers, he is starting to potentially turn. I'm not saying he's really on a heater or he really found his power stroke. No, we're not there yet. But the beginning of success has at least potentially arrived, which is a half step further than we can say he was, you know, a week or two ago. Either that or he's playing against pitchers more his speed because the Phillies are taking on the worst two teams in either league. Regardless. On April 19th, when I say Stott has four hits in the last five games, it sounds low. When I say Johan Rojas has four hits in the last five games, including
holy
two
crap
on Wednesday in the Rockies finale, including a double, sweet
holy
Christmas! Put your hands together, folks! I'll say it again. Yes, the Phillies are currently facing some of the worst pitching they'll see all year, and what I'm saying is the same thing I will always say. It's still counts. The victories still count. The hits still count. The runs still count. And for the way some of these guys, especially Rojas, whose success or lack thereof is being the most scrutinized, the way they've been going, even a little bit of hitting is good to see. Because now he's got another batch of weak teams, or a weak team to go up against, get more comfortable, and perhaps capitalize on his recent success. And that being said, if he faceplants and goes 0 for the weekend, well, we're back to zero. But right now, we can say that Rojas has made better contact in the last week, and he's also made more contact in the last week. From opening day to April 11th, Johan Rojas went 5 for 31. In the last week, April 12th to April 19th, he is 4 for 14. So he has almost equaled his hit total for the first couple weeks of the season in the last week. I said this about somebody else, and it's true here too. That's not nothing.
It's not nothing. Like, he's hitting 200 right now. What is acceptable to you? What is an acceptable, like, give me a batting average and an on-base percentage. I don't care about slugging. He's not there to hit.
No.
Any power.
No, if he's hitting like 230, getting on base 300, you know.
That's exactly what I thought. Those are my exact numbers. If he's hitting 230 and getting on base at, you know, a 300 clip, that's doable.
That means he's in the range of like, oh, I can get hot. Like, he's the kind of like a hitter who's not, you don't want in the middle of your batting order, but like maybe he gets hot for a week in July and then another week in September or something. Like, he is a guy who comes up with runners on and you don't automatically think the inning is over.
Exactly.
You think,
he's capable. He hits enough that you know that he'll get one in a big situation at some point, and you know it will happen.
Like when a ball is hit hard to third base, Alec Boehm isn't automatically getting it. But you've seen him make incredible plays at third base enough times that you know, well, there's at least a chance he pulls this off.
Like, yes.
And that's kind of the Rojas on offensively that I would approach that with as well, because you know he doesn't have to be the best hitter on the team, and you know the hits are starting to come at a little bit of a faster clip. Again, I'm not saying he's there. I'm not saying he's fixed. I'm not even saying he will get there. I'm just saying if you're somebody who's looking for signs that he will, this is one.
Remember when we used to be called the most negative podcast? I feel like Philly space. I remember those days. I know they were a lot. They were a while ago. We've been in this phase for a while, but I remember that. And here we are telling people there is, if you want it, there is a reason to be hopeful about Johan Rojas. It just struck me just now as quite a thing.
Well, the Phillies are set to face, that's right, the Chicago White Sox this weekend.
Oh boy.
It'll be Garrett Crochet versus Spencer Turnbull in game one tonight at Citizens Bank Park. Then at 6:05 on Saturday, you get Mike Soroka versus Zach Wheeler. And on the Sunday matinee, you get Nick Nastrini and Aaron Nola. So
ooh, yeah.
With their two stallions going at the top of the rotation, boy, there is no reason not to win this series. And I'll say it again, no reason not to win all three. There really isn't. Go undefeated on a homestand, Phillies. I dare you. Last thing before we wrap up, Liz, you see the Met City Connect jerseys?
I did.
What do you think? Real quick.
I think they're all right. I mean, there is some negative feedback about the fact that they have the name Brooklyn. Why did they have the borough of Brooklyn anywhere on their uniforms?
It says Brooklyn?
There's like a reference to Brooklyn somewhere. They are in Queens. Evan Drellich was annoyed at this. He is a Queens resident. And Evan Drellich of The Athletic, he is annoyed that they do not heavily feature Queens. And I agree.
Yeah.
That is a huge, huge missed opportunity, especially since they included some stuff with about the 7 train, with like the pinstripes are really cool. Like, I actually think the uniforms are awesome. I like them a lot more than Philly's. They're classic. They're really neat. They have some purple on them.
Well, they said there was going to be purple. I got excited when I actually saw it. Nah, I'm bored. Boring jersey to me. You know, it just looks blank and not alive to me. At least the Phillies used colors and their jerseys are like alive. They do look like, you know, watching them in person in those City Connects. They did kind of look like they were wearing like sleeping bags up to their chests and like hopping around, but still.
Looks like the jersey from the local Medieval Times gets from the local printer down the street for their baseball team. For their employee baseball team, they're playing the Medieval Times from, from Paramus, New Jersey, the one in Philadelphia.
Well, we'll see how the Mets do as they wear their new City Connect jerseys. But we'll, like I said, we'll watch.
I wish them nothing but bad luck and sadness.
We'll watch the Phillies take on the White Sox this weekend. For more episodes of Hittin' Season, check out BillyPenn.com/Hittin' Season for 3 episodes a week. And if you want even more content, head on over to our Patreon at Patreon.com/Hittin' Season. For WHYY and Billy Penn, I'm Justin Clue.
I'm Liz Rocher.
And this has been Hittin' Season.